satellites are going to run into the moon of an asteroid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's they're going to deliberately smash into it to see if they can change its trajectory, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but that's pretty cool. And my wife actually saw the other night, she saw the big Falcon rocket, the BF rocket, the big F rocket. Yeah, she saw the Saturday night it was, yeah. She saw it she was down by the harbor in Gloucester, and they were wondering what it was, and that's what it was, big Falcon rocket. Okay, so let's start this thing over again. We're going to talk some sports tonight. We're going to start off with Sean Driscoll in a few minutes. He's at St. Mary's High School. He's the football coach. And they're facing Bishop Fenwick on Friday evening. Both teams at 3-0. We got some really big games, in the area this weekend. LaSalle Academy from Rhode Island will be playing at St. John's Prep on Friday evening at 6 o'clock. And Tim, LaSalle is rated number one by Max Preps in Rhode Island. And then, Coach St. Pierre was telling me they're also rated number two by a different poll. And right now, St. John's Prep is rated number 10 in the state of Massachusetts. That's going to be an interesting game.
For sure.
Okay.
That's always good when you see these out-of-town Giants come in.
Yeah.
It's like when they used to play the team from D.C., Everett used to play, Brockton used to play them all the time because they couldn't get any games around here.
Well, that's going to be interesting. Another big game, Bill Newell will be at and getting, pictures, audio, and video from is, at Marblehead. In that game, it's Peabody at Marblehead. Both teams there are 3-0. And another big game in the area is in the Cape Ann League on Friday at 6:30, Triton at Amesbury. Triton, man, with a resurgence under Eric Burgos now at 2-1, and Amesbury at 2-0. So lots of good games. Bill, Tim and I will be in Gloucester as Salem is at 3-0, and they'll be facing the Fishermen with a record of 1-2. So a lot of interesting games. The St. Mary's Bishop Feehan game, if you read that in the item, a tremendous defensive battle and a very weird game in certain aspects. We're going to ask Coach Driscoll about that. And Tim and I saw quite a really interesting game up in North Andover over the weekend. On Friday, it was Marblehead 12 and North Andover 7. And that was a defensive game, too, as well. And Coach, Marblehead coming away with their victory streak intact.
Yeah, but it was Hatter and not the Andover play. A whole lot better than I think a lot of people expected. They didn't roll over and die because Marblehead came to town.
Mm-hmm.
They were the home team. They played with a lot of pride. They played with a lot of intensity. And they gave Marblehead a lot of headaches. And, you know, Coach wasn't really happy with the way his team played. So I'm sure Marblehead had a rather strenuous week, shall we say, of practicing.
Well, the coaches I've talked with,
you play an inspired opponent. You're no matter how good you are, you're going to have your troubles, and we saw that in college football last weekend.
Yeah, the coaches I've talked with so far this week have all mentioned that things have got to be cleaned up quite a bit. They're still lamenting, win or lose, they're lamenting some of the play that needs to be fixed, and each coach is very high on his team, on his individual team, and saying, you know, this is all fixable, and we're going to do okay. And we'll get to all of that. Also, pretty bleak on the professional sports scene for us Boston fans. It looks like Championship Town USA is a long time ago. And Tim, I don't know. I watched that game yesterday, and it was so disheartening to watch the Patriots self-destruct again.
Again, it's paying attention to the details, ball security, tackling. So it's a fairly simple game when you break it down.
That's what Bear Bryant always used to say.
Yep. And hold on to it.
Yeah, and stop those.
Don't let them go. Hold them up till you get help. And your teammates tackle them. Yep. Not happening.
And what's with the 50-50 jump balls? How many of those are they going to continue to throw?
Nah.
I don't get it.
When you got 5'9" defensive back and you got a 6'3", 6'4" receiver, you're going to lose a lot of those.
Well, but I'm talking about an offense.
Yeah, well, you didn't have, the one wide receiver that actually tested something. So, you knew they were going to have a long offensive afternoon when your top receiver isn't on the team.
All right, again, we're going to have Sean Driscoll.
Elton Agnew will be dropping the ball.
Yep. And we'll see what happens this week, and we'll see if and when Mac Jones is going to play again. And, of course, we'll talk with Mike Grenier later on about the Celtics' problems. And, boy, that's depressing as well. And maybe we'll get some good news from Gary Larrabee on golf. So all that's coming up here on MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. So we will take a break, and then when we come back, we will check in with Coach Sean Driscoll of St. Mary's High School. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
Here we go. Sean Driscoll is here. He is the St. Mary's High School football coach. Tim Kearns is here. I'm here. Bill Proposky is producing for us. Bill Newell is working feverishly in Scoreboard Central. Sean, welcome back. Reading the account of the game against Fian the other night, holy cow. I mean, blocked punts and missed field goals and a field goal with no time left. Tell me how this one went.
Yeah, it was definitely a different type of high school game. Bishop Jean's really good team, a really good squad, good program, a lot of numbers, and got about 28 seniors on the team, so we knew coming in we were going to have our hands full. I think coming out, they did a great job on slowing us down offensively. They did obviously a good job at controlling us at the line of scrimmage. Very big. I think everyone averaged about over six feet, or close to 300 pounds, like three or four of them. And they got some skill guys that really gave us a hard time, but I think the name of the game for both teams was defense. Our defense stepped up a lot in that game. The whole game played consistently. Did a nice job of taking their best stuff away. And it was a battle. We were fortunate that the block a punt, get inside the red zone right away, and we were hooked up on a nice pass from Dave Brown to Jack Marks to take a 6-0 lead. They came right back, attempted a field goal. We blocked it, which kept the lead at 6-0, but we already had trouble with those guys up front trying to move them at times, and they did a great job. And, you know, we kind of lost our composure in the second quarter a little bit with a turnover and a late field goal with no time left in the half. They took a 10-6 lead on us and, you know, really just had to regroup at the half, which we did, and I thought we did a little better job offensively, but we couldn't, you know, punch it in until big punt return from David Brown to kind of get us a lead with about 4.5 minutes to go. And our defense kind of finished off the game for us. It wasn't the best performance by us, but that was a really good football team, big school in a league, and that's going to make some noise in Division II come November, we think. So we were happy to get out of there with a win.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Coach, these are gut check wins when the kids are really going to dig down deep and you put the challenge in front of them. Okay, you're trailing, you know, you're not playing your best football. Now it's time to step up and to make some plays. Is that sort of the message we had at halftime for them?
Yeah, at halftime we kind of regrouped. We had a, you know, we obviously we knew we were in the game. We knew we could do some things against them we thought would give them trouble. But to their credit, they really took away some of our best stuff and did a nice job. We were fortunate enough defensively to be able to hold on. We had an outstanding game from our middle linebacker, Joel Max. The last two games for him have been phenomenal, and he really, you know, kept us in the ball game at that second level at the linebacker position. And I do like you said, the biggest thing is you get challenged a little bit. Now you're coming out at half. You're in a football game. You're down. You're in a tight. So in some ways, it was good for us. You know, like I always explain to the kids, every game's a big game. But when you get into the trenches late in the second half, and you know, we had a couple of stops inside the 20 where we held them to they made a field goal, missed a field goal. Something to be said for our football team.
You know, Sean, I'm looking at the write-up here in the item, and that third quarter, it says that Fian had the ball for over 8 minutes, and then the drive stalled. So tell me about that. As a coach, you look up, and all of a sudden the clock has gone from, you know, 11 down to 3 or whatever it might be, and they still have the ball. So how the boy? I mean, that was
their best possession of the game, I thought. They really had us on our heels a little bit, where we were fortunate. We had a big third down play to put them at fourth and long.
Mm-hmm.
I think put a stop to drive, which was huge for us. But again, you know, consistency in high school football, is what you look for. And I think at times, offensively, they were very consistent moving the ball down there. We just made that extra play on that one down to kind of set them back a little bit, which really helped us out getting the stop and get out of that third quarter. We were on our heels for sure in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Coach, it often only takes one player to make one play to change a game around, and certainly in your time there, you've had those kind of game changing athletes. Can you reflect on a couple of the kids?
Yeah, I think. I mean, my first year here, we had Jalen Echeverria, who was a big play back and very good defensive back, a special teams player for us, you know. And similar this year with David Brown and Derek Lynch, just they're both dynamic in their own way. I think, you know, one of the biggest plays Friday night, everyone talks about the punt return, is that, you know, they broke a long run up our sidelines on a pass play. We had someone fall down, and Dave Brown chased them down and tackled them at the 5. We ended up holding them on 4 downs, and they missed the field goal. So, you know, that play alone ended up probably being the game winner when you really look back at it, because the effort that he just made. And, you know, and that's always for our kids all the time. We want to compete every down, and we want to make the best effort as possible and good things happen. I think that was really the play of the game. Though it was early in the first half, it was a big play.
Coach, how difficult is it to get to teach you don't give up on any play? Because sometimes...
Yeah, it's hard, you know. I mean, the teachers, it's usually the kids have it in them already, and you got to give them a little bit of a push.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we preach defensively, you want obviously the team to snap the ball as many times they have before they have to get in the end zone. So if you stop them at the 1-inch line or the 10-yard line, make them keep snapping the ball, and maybe things will happen. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
People make mistakes. So we always try to emphasize that anytime we're preparing for a team, you want to make the one-on-one plays, and we were fortunate enough that, you know, Dave made that play.
Sean, do you guys have a game award for players that recognizes outstanding effort and playmaking during the course of the game? You know, a lot
sure.
of these will get decals that the kids put on their helmets. A lot of times there's a game ball. Do you guys have anything like that?
We have the one big award, like we say, because, you know, really emphasizing the team thing here, and that's getting the win and the W. We do have, you know, players that we obviously mention and recognize certain ways on defense and offense each week. And I think, like I said, we've had a couple of great weeks out of Joel Maggs, our junior linebacker, who's having a great year for us on both sides of the ball. And I think him on defense and Derek Lynch's and, you know, Tommy Flasker, they all do some great things defensively for us, and I think that's what we're hanging our hat on. You know, just playing really good defense and trying to control the line of scrimmage as best we can on both sides of the ball. But as far as any special awards, you know, we just kind of, you know, really preach the team aspect of the game.
When you looked at the tape, Coach, is there an offensive lineman who stood up to these guys and you could point out as saying, okay, man, he did a good job?
Yeah, I think Tommy Falefa, you know, he's been, you know, lineman of the year defensively the last 2 years for us, but he had a nice game offensively,
mm-hmm.
you know, for us. And we're really young up front and thin up front. And, he really stepped up and took a leadership role there. And we're getting better each week. And I think, a lot has to do with him as well. Also, you know, our tight ends, Jack Marks and Nick Sackle are ends there. They're seniors this year coming back. They did a nice job. At times when we ask them to get down in there and get dirty a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Tim, you still there?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'm still here. Can't get rid of me.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like the proverbial bad penny, Rick. You know that. Sean, as you look at your schedule through the rest of the season, I'm sure you're going to say there are no easy games, but who do you see as your sickest opposition as you head towards the second half of the season?
Well, as I said before we started the year, I don't think the schedule makers were good to us when we started our league, you know, league play. For the most part, we start off with Fian, who's, you know, one of the better programs in Eastern Massachusetts, a lot of numbers, 125 players or so. A lot of seniors coming back, and then we go right from there to Bishop Fenwick, who's a rival, who's obviously, we know what a program they have, the consistency they have in winning over there, and the coaching that goes on, and the spirit of some of them there. We go to them this week, so we're right back at it there. And, you know, other ones not to forget about, Stang, Cardinal Spelman, those are physical teams that try to run the ball and get after you with it. So we got a tough road ahead. We're in a tough division going in, and these first two games, like I said, well, the good news is we had them at home, but to go back to back with them, those are two bruising teams that like to get after it, you know.
You know, Fenwick coach, they're in a machine, and Coach Woods, I don't know how he does it, but he does do it every single year. They've outscored their opposition first three games, 93-14, and they've beaten Norton, Arlington Catholic, and Swampscott in that order. So, what are you doing with the kids this week? What's the plan to combat?
First of all, the plan is to slow them down offensively like you try to do any week, but they have some weapons there. And like you said, Coach Woods does a great job. He seems to always get them in the right spot. They do all the little things that make them better, as I try to preach to our kids as well, all the little things they do. And you can see that they're well coached and they're very physical, especially up front. So we're going to have our hands filled with that. But we're going to have to try to come out and control the line of scrimmage and use our speed to our advantage and hopefully, you know, get off to a better start.
Okay. All right, Tim. It was your turn. You know, how important is it, Coach, to do that? I've seen a lot of high school games where a team that is sort of underdog comes in and scores really quickly and easily, and then they have a really hard time after that. And by the same token, I've seen teams that are heavily favored do the same thing. They'll score very quickly early on and then have a hard time after that. Is there any rhyme or reason to that?
Yeah, I think again, you're dealing with a high school athlete, and you know, I think when something goes right away, good for you, and all of a sudden they think it's going to be like the whole game, and you know, you play teams, and in any sport in high school, you tend to take your foot off the gas a little bit, and all of a sudden it's like, oh boy, we got to get after it again. You know, these guys aren't going away. And I think that happens a lot in high school sports in general, mm-hmm. but we try to coach against that each week. We're big, you know, always praising finish a play, finish a series, finish a quarter, finish a game, you know, as best you can all the time. And, hopefully, you know, we're getting better at that. The last couple of weeks, we've come out kind of slow, and we never really got on path on that. The track we like to have in the first half of last week. But we were fortunate enough that, like I said, good teams win close games and whatever they got to do to win. And we happened to make a couple special teams plays and broke a punt return for the game-winning score. So,
all right. Yeah, I want to ask about...
Those are all good signs.
I want to ask about special teams. It's easy for a layperson like myself to watch defense on special teams, you know, to defend a punt. That's easy. But when you're punting the ball yourselves or going otherwise, I'm thinking in particular the center, you know, if you have a long snap or whatever that might be, and the guy who has to punt the ball away. How often do you get to practice that in high school?
Well, I tell you what, we try to emphasize this each week as much as we can. I mean, we think special teams are, you know, could be game changers, especially the kicking game as far as, you know, extra points, punts, and kickoff, we pick probably the top three, you know, special teams that you have to be good each week, year in and year out. You have to have your best people on it, and you really can set a tone with a game with special teams. And I think, you know, it won a game for us last week, and like to keep emphasizing that to our kids, and I think they see the difference because, you know, you look at the box score of a high school game or a college game even. You know, you get a missed extra point. You see them losing by one. They go for two, don't get it. They lose by two. You know, I think those are very important points that gets overlooked until you look back at the game the next day. You look at the box score, say, oh, they would have did this if they made that. So it seems to come down to a special teams play all the time, at least for a couple of games.
Do you have any kids who like to be kamikazes and that they don't maybe play regularly, but they get out there on kickoff teams and just love to go?
We have some younger kids that make some great effort and see some time there. Yes. Yes, I don't know about the kamikaze, but I think at the same time, they like to get out and they know they have a shot to play, especially with a lot of seniors that play right now for us. One of the best ways to get on the field is special teams-wise. So.
Well, I'm just thinking of Matthew Slater, how he goes screaming full tilt boogie down the field no matter what. It's like, oh, my goodness, and he's fun to watch.
If you're good at it, you can make a great living, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Sean, great stuff. I wish you the best of luck this week. I know it's going to be a great game, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, great. Thanks for reaching out, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care, Tim.
All right. That is Sean Driscoll, who is the St. Mary's High School football coach. And I just think of that, Tim. There's no analogy like that in baseball, unless it's a defensive replacement in the last inning.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Can you use the word kamikaze, you know, in describing a player's fashion of action or playing a game now, you know? You have to be careful.
Probably. But you get what I'm trying to say here. Just go screaming down the field and let's go, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Might not play otherwise, but I'm going to be out there in that squad. Oh, yeah.
There are kids like this that just love the feed off the adrenaline.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hell bent for leather to get there and make a play.
Well, the other thing, too, I forget who I was talking to, one of the coaches, but a lot of the players who have been praised so far this season are the offensive guys, and I forget who I was talking about. It was a fullback who never carried the ball, but he just loves to block. He loves to pancake people, and it's like, you know, only in football. That's really to enjoy that and have fun with it and not even have any statistics, you know? It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll check in with Gary Larrabee in just a second here. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSO NewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore with great local sports coverage. Live play-by-play football, Monday night sports night show, the game night football show, feature spotlight interviews with coaches and players, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, and joining us this fall, Nick and Nick in the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. The place to hear and see positive local coverage, making connections that support the North Shore.
All right, here we go. Tim, we'll be right back. Gary Larrabee is with us now. Of course, sports historian, golf writer, all-around good guy. And Gary, we Tim and I were talking a little bit about the demise of Boston as the sports capital, championship capital of the world, but there's still a lot of other stuff going on. So certainly welcome back, and where do you want to start?
Well, I guess we should start with that boring, but at times exciting, and then boring again. President's Cup over the weekend down there at Quail Hollow in North Carolina outside Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans won for the time in 14 meetings here in this overrated and almost not necessary competition every other year. Of course, in other years, it's the Ryder Cup, which will be back next year in Paris. But the Americans had a little bit of trouble with the international team down there in Charlotte. It was a blowout after one day. It was fairly close after 2 days. And then the Americans, led by Jordan Spieth's 5-0 record, proceeded to finish off the internationals yesterday, 17.5 to 12.5. I hope Tim didn't watch any of that, because I sure as heck didn't.
I watched a smattering towards the end, Gary. Like you, you know, I saw the score totals, and I kept thinking about that. As I saw the totals on the first and second day, I kept thinking of you. And then when I turned it on yesterday, I'm like, oh, Europeans are getting closer. This might be interesting. And then the U.S. was just, you know, able to put out a stiff arm, so to speak, and keep them at bay.
At least the internationals made it respectable, but I didn't know half of the players on the international team, because some of the live players, all of the live players didn't play for either team in this competition. But now we'll get really interesting as we begin the 365-day countdown, or whatever it is, between now and the Ryder Cup resuming next September over in Paris. It'll be very interesting to see how the scenario works between now and then, Tim, and whether or not the PGA of America and the PGA of, I'm not sure if it's the European PGA, what exact organization puts the team together for Great Britain and Ireland, but we'll have to find out if the live players figure into the rosters for next year. We can begin the arguing and begin the debate right now if you want.
Gary, is there an agreement between the European Tour and the PGA that allows American and European players to cross over and play in each other's tours?
I think there are guidelines based on the DP European Tour and the PGA Tour. I'm not sure exactly what those guidelines are, but players are supposedly have to follow them to be able to qualify for the respective Ryder Cup teams. That may not happen this time around because all the commotion being caused by the LIV Tour, but, let's wait till we get into next year, and it gets really interesting to see how things figure out between now and, say, March, when we start talking about the Tournament Players Championship, which is not till May, but of course we get the Masters in April. So lots to look forward to, I think, in terms of controversy and probably some stupid decisions and how this thing all evolves, but talking about the European tour, Tim, I hope you were very excited yesterday to see an Italian win the Kazoo French Open. I love that word, Kazoo. I guess that's a brand name. Uh-huh. Something over in Europe. I don't know, C-A-Z-O-O. But Italian named Migliozzi won the event, shooting a 62 in the final round, 9 birdies, after shooting 66 in the third round, after trailing the leader by 13 shots after 2 rounds. Quite an interesting development. Did you pay attention to that at all, Tim?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
That's okay. That's the third guy, the third tournament this guy has won over in the European Tour. I don't know if he'll qualify for the, but it's a great last name. Migliozzi, a wonderful name. I'm sure they're still dancing in the streets, I'm sure, in Florence and Siena and Rome and Milan after their countrymen won yesterday over in France. And, of course, you must have noticed, Tim, that a wonderfully well English-speaking Thailand woman, young woman, won the LPGA tournament. And I made note of this because the sponsor of that tournament were two of the gigantic brand names in America, Walmart. This explains why the tournament was held in Arkansas, and Procter & Gamble. And I'm sure, Tim, that you were impressed with the woman who won. Her name is Ataya Sitikul from Thailand, dancing in the streets in Bangkok after she won that yesterday in a playoff over Daniel Kang.
Now, Thailand, that's someplace different that we haven't seen winners come out of on either the men's or the women's tour, Gary, but it just speaks to the continued expansion of golf worldwide that you have spoke to many times.
So true, and it's just the way it's going to be, I think, from now going forward, and players come from all four corners of the globe, maybe the six or seven corners of the globe, I don't know, but the players are coming from everywhere, and Cameron Smith, an Australian, a young Australian, won the British Open, and start looking forward, I think, to 2023, where the U.S. Open is going to be played out in L.A. And, of course, speaking of the Los Angeles Country Club North Course, did you see, Tim, where a two-time USGA mid-amateur champion named Stuart Hagstead shot 59 at the L.A. Country Club North Course, which will be hosting the U.S. Open next June. This guy misses a 20-foot birdie put on the last hole to shoot 58.
Wow.
I wonder how tough this course is going to be for the best players in the world come next June.
Oh, that's something to look at. Yeah, cool.
A guy burger when they shoot 59.
Well, it's one thing when you shoot 59 at Memphis Country Club, which is a... anyways, but I'm sure the USGA will figure out ways to avoid any 59s next year at the U.S. Open, or Ben Hogan will be rolling over in his grave.
Jeez. Well, Gary, what about... go ahead, Tim.
There were two women from Thailand that finished in the top four yesterday at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship.
That's right.
To have one win it, there was another girl who was three shots behind her.
That's exactly right. I was saving that for your brilliant observation to make that an insertion into our conversation, and a very good observation. So they're all worldwide tours right now, and the LPGA is really a worldwide tour, but it's always fun to watch them. We should just mention a couple more quick things before you let me go. Next Monday, the New England PGA has its last major competition of the year. It's the Avidia Cup. 18 holes among the top 54 players in the section playing for a $5,000 first prize at Salem Country Club. They start teeing off at 9 o'clock. It's free of charge. Go on over shot making at Salem Country Club next Monday. Also, the first of 2 days of the Massachusetts Super Senior Championship for players over 65 years old out in Western Mass at Taconic. That's also next Monday and Tuesday. And lastly, on a very sad note, guys, over the weekend we learned of the death at the age of 58 of five-year general manager at Salem Country Club, Peter Fischel, who passed away suddenly, unexpectedly, in his sleep. a terrific loss for the club. But ironically, guys, Peter was wrapping up his fifth and final year at the club before moving on to a beautiful new job in Rockville, Maryland, Woodmont Country Club, a 45-hole private club, a wonderful opportunity for Peter, probably where he would be able to finish up his career. Sadly, he has finished up his career at Salem Country Club in a very somber note, but he made a tremendous impact, a very positive, tremendous impact on Salem Country Club these last 5 years. He will be missed.
That is sad, and thank you for letting us know. What about column? You're still writing, Gary?
Yes, we have two columns to go, Rick. Thank you. Before I ride off into the sunset, this week I'll be writing a very, very, I think, a very sweet and a very heartwarming story on the golf course, competition-wise, but what's going on behind the scenes this year at Kernwood Country Club in Salem, involving an autistic young man, and what a very, very nice basic gesture by the club has made this young man's life very much brighter.
I love it. I'm looking forward to that. Do you know when it will be in the Salem News, Gary? You know what day it will be published?
We're hoping Friday. That's the game plan right now from the powers to be. It'll be Friday. And hope you enjoy it.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, I just have one question. You talked last week. We had a homework assignment, and you had your Mount Rushmore of interviews. Back in those days, Gary, were you able how did you approach interviewees? Because now, they come up to the podium. Everybody in all the sports, you've got to wait for someone to approach the podium. And so it's all cookie cutter. But you would get stories. Will you tell me how did that change, or what did you do back then?
Well, in those days, I guess you could say, in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, things were much less formal. In the case of my interviews with my interview with Gary Player at Turner Hill after he was finishing up a corporate outing for SAP, a huge international company, I just walked up to him as he was walking off the last green with his amateur partners and introduced myself and asked him if he would be so kind as to give me a few minutes to talk some golf before he heads back into Boston. And he said, "Gary, great to meet you, and let's sit down and have a drink and talk golf. I would be happy to share my thoughts with you for a little while." He gave me a half an hour. He could have made it much. It was just very informal in those days, Rick.
Yeah.
Like I said, with my other situation with Al Palmer out at Marlboro Country, he was trying to push the kickoff of the PGA Senior Tour, now the Champions Tour. Just the seven or eight of us were there talking very informally around a table, very low key. Now, none of that stuff happens these days unless you do everything prearranged. You have to fill out forms and make formal application to talk to anybody anywhere. Thankfully, it's not that way. It wasn't like that then. And I don't, of course, the greatest personality probably in the history of the game of golf was so amenable, like Gary Player has always been, and just quite memorable and very informal, and you didn't have any security running around. It was just a different world than it is today, and it's just the way it is, like it or not.
Well, it was great reading because you'd get a different perspective on things.
Is this one of the things that the Live guys have said was part of the PGA control over them?
I don't know. They because changing times, Tim, require changing policy, changing protocol, and I think the PGA Tour has to always operate in the best interest of their players, like the DP World European Tour has to do the same thing. And I think it's safety. This is a crazier world we're living in these days. It's about safety, security, and at the same time trying to make everybody happy. And it's not that way anymore on the PGA Tour or the majors, but it was a wonderful time, guys, in those old days.
And,
I'm grateful I had a chance to experience that stuff.
Love hearing about it, and it makes for great reading and great listening. Hey, Gary, have a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
Stay well, guys.
Thanks, Gary. Take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, who is a sports historian and golf writer. And I should remind you, Gary is heard twice a week. He'll be on with Nick and Nick later on this week, North Shore Sports Desk, which is now heard here on MSO News Sports, and it's dropping on Thursdays now during football season. And a couple of scores to reflect on. Boys soccer today was Rockport 2 and Salem Academy 1, I think, although Tim, you'll appreciate this. I wrote down Rockport 2, Salem Academy blank. I didn't put anything down. So I think it was 2-1.
Cool.
Partial score. Salem 3, Triton, is it nil or zero in soccer?
Nil.
All right. Well, Salem 3, Triton, nil. St. Mary's 5 over Spelman 1. St. John's Prep shut out Masco 4-0. And it was Stoneham 2, Kip Academy. Again, I have a blank there, so it's either 1 or 0. But Stoneham did win. I was trying to write this down while you guys were talking. In volleyball, a couple of scores. Girls volleyball, Ipswich 3, Georgetown nothing, and Newburyport 3, Pentucket nothing. We will take a break and come back and talk about the Celtics situation with Mike Grenier here on North Shore Sports Night. So please to stay with us. We will be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, I'm Rick Moore, back with Tim Kern. Joining us now is sports writer Mike Grenier. And it's been great having Mike on low these many weeks to talk about the wonderful situations that the Celtics were in.
That's true. You know, it's funny. I thought a lot about this, Rick. And, Tim, it must have occurred to you as well. About 6 or 7 weeks ago, the Celtics looked to be in prime position to go back to the NBA Finals because, A, they had acquired, you know, Malcolm Brogdon. B, they acquired Danilo Gallinari. Everything seemed intact with the coaching staff. But now all that has flipped over, right? They lost Gallinari to an injury. He probably will never put on a Celtics uniform after having a torn ACL. And then, of course, you have this latest thing with Ime Udoka getting suspended for a year. I don't think you'll ever see him come back to the Celtics. And now, also Rick and Tim, we have the Robert Williams situation. He injures the knee that was injured prior to the playoffs last year. He had arthroscopic surgery, and now they're saying he's going to be out 8 to 12 weeks. So you have to factor that into the beginning of their season, which looked so promising just several weeks ago.
Yeah, it went from speculation to confirmation to condemnation.
Right.
For the coach. You know, in a matter of a couple of days. So, you know, it's just so unfortunate, commonplace these days.
Yep.
With, you know, professional athletes, coaches, owners, you know, it's like, give us fans a break. Just conduct yourself properly, play the game, run the team, you know, because making an ass out of yourself is just way too easy.
Yes, yeah. I couldn't agree more, Tim. And not only that, now we have the mystery of having a 34-year-old coach as the leader of the Celtics on an interim basis. Right, Rick? I think that's a huge question mark. I'm concerned about, number one, the Robert Williams injury, because originally it was projected to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Now it's 8 to 12 weeks. And it's been kind of a, even though he's a young player, it's not like he's 34 years old and has chronic injury. He's like 23, 24 years old with this chronic knee problem. And we don't know how many games he's going to play this coming season. It always seems like he needs to take a break. Even when he's supposedly healthy, he misses a game or two and then he's okay. And of course, we know how huge a factor he can be as a shot blocker, as an improving offensive player, as a guy who runs up and down the court and hustles and gets steals and all that. I'm concerned about him being out for almost 3 months. And, of course, my second concern on the list of concern would be the youth of this interim coach. I know the Celtics are talking a good game at media practice today, saying how much they respect him. He's been around the team for 2 or 3 years. But we still have a totally inexperienced NBA head coach. He was coaching Division II just 4 or 5 years ago, Tim. He was a guy that was coaching Division II college ball just 4 or 5 years ago.
You know, in response to a couple of those things, I agree with Robert Williams. With that one, that's the one that really took the steam out of me. I mean, losing the Italian guy was bad, but he never played for the Celtics to begin with.
Right.
So the concern about Williams is he ever going to be healthy? I don't know. I mean, we've seen this. We've been around a lot, so we've seen a lot of athletes come in with great promise, but then, you know, the career just falls apart due to chronic injuries.
Right.
And in terms of, Muzzella, what's his name? The
Joe Mazzulla.
Mazzulla, okay. In terms of Mazzulla, I'm thinking this, and see if this makes sense, because I'm trying to spin this thing positively, man.
Right.
I'm thinking Mazzulla is going to be, the kind of guy who can get these guys to work together because they want to. They know now where they've been and how they can get back there again. And, you know, Udoka had both that and the strategy. So now I'm wondering if there's someone else on the bench or whether Brad Stevens checks in or whatever who can help, you know, Mazzulla with the strategy. Because I got a feeling, you know, he coached the Summer League too, and I guess a couple of the kids like him, you know, the Celtics young guys.
Sure. Sure.
So I'm hoping that, you know, strategy-wise, where Tatum might want to go off on his own or you know how those guys get.
Yes.
Give me the ball.
Well, yeah.
And Udoka wouldn't allow that. So I'm hoping that there's something there that can help him with strategy. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, Rick. I mean, I'm 100% with you in that line of thinking. And here's what my thought is this. That I think that Brad Stevens may be looking at a veteran coach that's out there who maybe has been pushed out to the, you know, maybe at home right now because he couldn't coach last year. They're talking about Frank Vogel, who was the head coach of the Lakers and has been a head coach of the Indiana Pacers, I believe. And he's an experienced head coach. I think if he's available, I believe he's available, they're talking about bringing him in as an assistant coach. And that's where the strategy part comes in, Rick. That
okay.
He's perfectly suited once he's acclimated to what the Celtics want to do strategy-wise. He'd be the perfect one to implement and get the ear of the new young head coach and say, this is what we do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're on the right track there, Rick. I believe that Brad Stevens will be looking right now for an experienced coach that's been out of work for a few months or a year,
mm-hmm.
and bring him in and be sort of a wise, experienced coach to be close to Joe Mazzulla on the bench. I believe that the Celtics players will buy into Joe Mazzulla because he is relatable. He's relatable. He's only 34 years old, mm-hmm. or 33 or 34. And the players can relate to that youth part of it. And I think Mazzulla, from what I've seen in his press conference today, he's serious about the job. He even joked, he said that when somebody asked about all the praise that Brad Stevens was heaping him with a few days ago, Mazzulla said, Coach Stevens must have had a concussion that day. Which is a great way of self-deprecating humor.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I think Mazzulla will approach this with a lot of enthusiasm and passion. But the part of that we don't know is the thing you pointed out, Rick. Strategically, how is he going to handle the team starting from, you know, day one in practice and going on when you're going up against a good team like Philly or Toronto or Milwaukee or the Lake, whoever, it doesn't matter. He has not been through those particular wars as a head coach where you're making the major decisions. And so you hope that he will be a quick learner. You know, that's what Celtics fans have to hope for, that he will be a quick learner and keep the team in the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference and get ready for the playoffs.
All right, Mike, I'm going to ask you to make a prediction. They were 51-31 last year.
Right.
What happens this year?
Wow. Wow, that's a phenomenal question, Rick. I'm going to say they're going to be around. I think they can still win 53, 54, 55 games because of the talent level has improved with Malcolm Brogdon being added to the team. And, of course, Jaylen Brown and Tatum having another year's experience and getting to the finals. I think they're hungry to get back to the finals and finish the job this time. So I think that will be a motivating factor for them, which is cool for a young coach like Joe Mazzulla. The players should be motivated enough. It's not like they're in a rebuild mode and he has to sell a long-term program to the players. I think their thought already is that we have one of the best teams in the league, and we're going to pursue a championship, and nothing less than that will be satisfying. So, but then along with that, you need a healthy Robert Williams to be part of that.
Yeah, and that's the. Go ahead, Tim.
How much will the ownership bank on the shadow of Bill Russell?
The Russell thing can be an inspiration for them all year. Obviously, it's going to be league-wide. Rick, what do you think of the way they put the number 6 on the parquet floor as an inspiration for the entire season? They inscribed the number
well,
6.
I wish they had put something over it so people who come, you know, pink hats who come into the stadium say, who's number 9?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, right? I think it's a great thing they did, and I noticed the players today at the press conference, they have that, the black number 6 already inscribed on their jerseys, and I think that's a great, great thing, and I think Bill Russell's name will be out there throughout the NBA, and particularly in Boston.
You know, guys, and Tim, chip in on this one, too. I hate this when this happens. I love the respect he's getting now,
yep.
But damn it. He deserved that when he was with us. Are you kidding me? All the things, you know, he lived to be a ripe old age, and wouldn't it be great for him to have seen that, to see his number retired across the league, to see the team wearing, you know, the number 6 on the floor? You know what I'm saying, guys? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I mean, he's in the grave, sadly, now, but I think he would have been extremely proud to see the kind of respect and the kind of tributes that the entire league is making. But you're right. It would have been better if they had done it 5 years ago.
Or 10 years ago, even. Or
10 years ago. Because, obviously, he was going to the NBA Finals because the trophy was named after him.
Yeah.
He was presenting. But a lot of these players who were meeting him for the first time, I swear, Rick, they didn't know anything about him.
I know. That's awful.
It is awful. It's almost like these players need a history course before you can actually enter the league to see who the great players were that preceded you, and to tell these young players they didn't make $18 million as rookies. They made, you know, $10,000 and $15,000, and that's what those guys made, you know, in the early days. I may be overestimating that. I want to say Tommy Heinsohn, talking to him, I think he made like $6,000 or $7,000.
Can you imagine?
The first couple of years in the league, and that's why all those guys had summer jobs. Hmm. Luskatov, you know, Heinsohn, I don't know what Russell did, but all those players had second jobs in the summertime.
Tim, final comments? Yep.
Along with, of course, the plays who have, you know, the frame of reference is no bigger than their fist.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the up-and-coming sports writers and commentators also need that history lesson.
Oh, no question.
Because, again, frame of reference, understanding that the history of the NBA. They're so wrapped up in all of the ESPN presentation of the game today that they forget to look back at all the guys who covered the games before them and all the true, true superstars who played the game.
And Tim,
you know, understand what they went through.
Yep. And Rick and Tim, a great example of that right now we're seeing is Aaron Judge has 60 homers. And I kind of hope, I actually saw that game on TV as a 12-year-old when Tracy Stallings of the Red Sox gave up Roger Maris's home run of the 61st. And I bet you the young players in Major League Baseball, they're not aware that, I don't consider Barry Bonds' record legitimate.
Right.
You know, I don't consider Sammy Sosa hitting 64, 65 homers and Mark McGwire. No. Those guys were ahead of Aaron Judge. But those are illegitimate, pathetic way to look at the home run record because those guys were proven cheaters. They were in the, with the drugs. They took the steroids to boost their strength. So the guys you should be looking at are Hank Aaron.
Oh, God, yeah.
For the overall record.
Yep.
And, of course, Albert Pujols, legitimate with a 700 home, magnificent achievement. And Aaron Judge is doing it the right way. I'm impressed with the class he's showing.
Yes, yes.
As he's, you know, trying to break that Roger Maris record.
He's great for the game. He is a real personality. And the thing I like, he exudes fun. Like, he just wants to do good. He wants to do good for the team, and he's having fun playing the game.
Right, Rick. And I, there was a game last, the one against the Red Sox, although just prior to the Red Sox game. He hit a home. They were down like four runs. He hit a home run. And then...
Yes.
Carlos Stanton hit a grand slam to a walk-off home in the bottom. And he was the first one to race out of the dugout and congratulate Stanton, you know. And it's like, to me, he's caught up in the team's achievement and trying to finish first. And sure, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on him to hit that 60-foot. You can see it in his eyes. You can see it's a completely different kind of pressure that Roger Maris faced in 1961,
oh, yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, nobody wanted him to break it back then, so, yeah.
Right, exactly.
You know, what the New York Scribes would do if he had been able to hit 61 against the Red Sox like Maris did. Oh.
61 years later, yeah. Hey, listen, we got to wrap it up, guys, but
yep.
Mike, I have a homework assignment I just thought of.
Okay.
And Tim, I'm going to give you the same assignment. I want you guys to come up with someone on the Mount Rushmore of sports writers. Besides yourself. You can't nominate yourself, Mike.
Okay, all right. I can't nominate Gary Larrabee either, right? Because
You could nominate Gary Larrabee, but let's talk about it next week because I think Gary's among them. I think, you know, between the old Boston Herald, the Record American, the Boston Globe, the Salem News, the old Beverly, we've had some fabulous writers. We've had writers locally who've gone on to fame elsewhere.
No question about it. That's a great old school homework assignment, Rick. I'll be glad to think about it for a week.
Okay, Tim, final thoughts.
I'm trying to recover from the fact that I'm old enough to be part of this assignment.
Yeah, because kids today don't even know who the sports writers are.
Exactly. And we'll never know, by the way, how injured Mac Jones is because Belichick definitely still works for the KGB.
Oh, God. Well, hopefully better days are coming.
Right.
Hey, Mike, let's see. We must be getting closer to the opening game, so that's, what, in a couple of weeks?
Well, yeah, you're right. October, you know, they actually start practice tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The preseason games, they play four of them starting this coming Sunday. And then you're into the season against the Philadelphia, you know, Philadelphia 76ers. What a test for Joe Mazzulla in his opening game as a very young head coach. By the way, he's the youngest and tied with the guy that Danny Ainge just hired, who he took him away from the Celtics, 34 years old.
Yeah.
Younger since Lawrence Frank in like 2003, 2004. So that's a tall order for a young coach,
oh, yeah.
Especially handling a team that was in the NBA Finals last year.
That's, well, we'll know a little bit more next week.
You're right, Rick. Yeah.
I just looked at an article on that. Bill Russell was 32 when he took over the Celtics.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we're talking a non-player coach, though. You know, you're right.
Yeah.
He was 32, and of course, he controlled his own destiny in the Celtics. And I think that came out pretty well, as we know.
Rather. Mike, you be good, be well, and we'll talk next Monday.
That sounds great, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
There you go.
Well, you know, we were talking, too, and I forgot to mention this to Mike, how, you know, Red Auerbach, it seemed to me like he was 150 years old when he retired. He was, what, 46? So, you know, it's a different thing, but... Yeah, I want you to think about that. I've got some things in mind I'd like to discuss about sports writers as well. Cause, you know, I said the other day, Tim, when we were going up to North Andover, epic fail in certain parts of American education, of which I am a part. And, I never considered that with sports, that these guys, a lot of them do not know, the legacy of the uniform that they're wearing.
No.
Because
it's all about that player.
Yeah.
The
individual. All right, Coach, have a good evening. Are the Yankees playing tonight? I don't even know.
Probably.
All right, I want to see see if I can find them because I want to watch that thing. All right, Tim, I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
All right, Amber.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, our MSO super analyst and Ambassador of Goodwill. And, excuse me. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell. Lots of stuff up there on the site. You got to check it out. I've got three or four high school interviews of football coaches that are going to go up there tomorrow. And we will, again, our game of the week will be Gloucester at Salem. Bill Newell will be covering Peabody at Marblehead this week in high school football. Thank you for being with us. If you are of a notion, give us an email. Drop us an email at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Be well. Do the right thing.